The volume.
That Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time with the players and coaches who lived in them. Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl? Or what about the after parties? We're gonna dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The J-Boy Show is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. There's no better place to bet all the action than on FanDuel Sportsbook during the football season. There's many reasons why I like using it. I mean, betting on the NFL, they're America's number one sportsbook. It's easy to use, it's safe and secure, but I love the fast payouts. I'm huge on that, and you get it as quick as 2 hours. That's tough to find and even harder to beat. The convenience of it, you know, that there's a lot going on. There's a lot of games, whether it's live betting, whether it's betting before the games, you know, the spread, are you taking the overs, the unders? They make it unbelievably easy to use. And the boosts, the odds, the specials that they run are unbelievable. You get risk-free bets and same-game parlays. You get enhanced odd markets and a ton more. It's just a win-win for everybody. And if you're new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app to get started now and sign up with the promo code JBOY. That's J-B-O-Y. Let them know that I sent you. 21 and older and present in Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, or West Virginia. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXT-STEP to 53342 in Arizona. 1-888-789-QUADRUPLE-7 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, Virginia. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789 or visit www.1800gambler.net in West Virginia.
All right, everybody. Thank you guys for joining me on another Sunday recap. Hope you guys had a fantastic holiday week, Thanksgiving week and weekend. I know everybody ate well, had another great Saturday of college football. Gonna recap all the big rivalry games. I mean, you look at Ohio State, Michigan, Auburn, Alabama, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State ended up being a hell of a game. Even earlier in the week, Mississippi State and Ole Miss. With the rain, a little more low scoring than everybody thought, but that ended up being a heck of a game. And I want to start with Ohio State and Michigan. I'll get to the Lincoln Riley stuff a little bit here at the end when we talk about Bedlam, but I want to talk about the in-game stuff early. You know, number one, it's good for college football that Michigan won. And I know there's Ohio State fans that don't want to hear that, and I'm full of all for a meritocracy, but it's good for college football that Michigan won, losing 15 of the last 16. That's a rivalry, and we've talked about this on the show, that needs to be competitive, that we know, you know, I mean, you look at the guys in the locker room at halftime having to be held back. There's a lot of emotion in that game. There's a lot of intensity in that game, and it's great for college football. It's a rivalry that college football needs to be able to continue to thrive, and what do you need in rivalries? You need parity. to keep both parties interested. It's like in a marriage, you got to keep it interesting, man. You know, sometimes you got to dress up as the doctor, I guess, or, you know, pretend you met at a Holiday Inn or something. But it was big for Michigan. Obviously, our co-host, David Cohn, former Michigan quarterback. And, you know, it's amazing. His son was born a couple months ago, and his son is 1-0 as a Michigan fan against Ohio State. So maybe he was the lucky charm. But, you know, and people are going to analyze this game, and people are going to talk about, you know, C.J. Stroud, even though he finished 34-49 for almost 400 yards and two touchdowns. But this game came down to one thing. And at the end of the day, regardless of what level of football you're playing, this is what it always comes down to. Michigan got after their ass up front. Michigan was the more physical team. I mean, Haskins carried the ball 28 times for 170 yards and five touchdowns. And when Michigan had to have it, because Cade McNamara didn't throw a touchdown. J.J. McCarthy didn't throw a touchdown. When Michigan had to have it or had to have a drive, they were able to turn around, hand it off, and bully Ohio State. You know, in the past, Ohio State's just really bullied Michigan. They've used speed outside. They've been able to protect the quarterback. They've been able to stop the Michigan run and really limit what they're able to do because Michigan hasn't had a guy that could throw them to wins. Well, this game, Michigan was able to physically push Ohio State around up front, and not just on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, you look, Ohio State had many chances that were ended, whether it was Aiden Hutchinson or Njobu or whoever coming off and making a big play. They were able to somewhat slow down Trevion Henderson. I mean, he had 17 touches for 74 yards and a touchdown, but he can put up big numbers. I mean, when you're back, and if you add A.J. Henning in there, I mean, Michigan had six rushing touchdowns. And what a huge win for Jim Harbaugh. Now, you're looking at the playoff race. It's getting hella interesting. Hella interesting. I mean, Michigan looking to have a chance to go play Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game and get into the playoff. Ohio State now with two losses. Then you've got Alabama, which we're going to get to the Iron Bowl in a second, playing Georgia that might have two losses. There's a ton of scenarios that can happen. But at the end of the day, Michigan just said, look, we're going to push you around. We're going to do what we want with you when we have to. And that's going to be a theme on this recap. It's what you do in the drives that matter. It's what you do in the time that matters. You can look at a full body of work of a game and say, man, we were really good for 80% of it. But the 20% we needed, that last 20%, we weren't able to do. We weren't able to finish. Michigan was able to finish. Ohio State answered in the fourth quarter, putting up 14 points. What does Michigan do? They throw up 14. And it wasn't beautiful. It wasn't some schematic, innovative, unbelievable, you know, play calling or scheme that was unstoppable. It was just pushing people around. And most of the time, when it comes down to it, and the margin for error is very small, the team that can push the other team around in the run game is able to have more success. Because if I can run, 90% of the time, I can pass. So congrats to Michigan. Very interested to see, you know, how these rankings play out this next week. But again, it's good for college football for this not to be a lopsided rivalry. I mean, it's funny, during the week, you know, Cohn was saying he had Ohio State fan buddies that were like, man, you know, eventually y'all are going to beat us and maybe y'all need to make the rivalry what it used to be. And we just really came down to the fact that I guess Ohio State fans just must want to feel something again. Well, they're feeling something this morning. And those who want to go out there and blame C.J. Stroud, let me give you these numbers again. 34 of 49, 394 yards, two touchdowns. QBR of 84. You can say, oh, well, two touchdowns, you know, in a ton, whatever, whatever. But, I mean, 400 yards passing? If you'd have told me Ohio State had 400 yards passing, I'd have told you they won the game. C.J. Stroud, you want to talk about not playing well up front on the offensive line? And it's not all to blame on them. C.J. Stroud had six rushes for negative 30 yards with a long of one. So in summation, there's really two stats that you have to look at here. And really, you can combine them as one if you want to. Ohio State rushing, 30 carries, 64 yards, one touchdown, long of 28. Michigan rushing, 41 carries, 297 yards, and six touchdowns. That's dominance. That's dominance. So Ohio State had two receivers over 100 yards, but between those two, they only had one touchdown. So while they were giving up, you know, chunk plays, and Olave made a hell of a catch, and a couple of the other guys made some pretty impressive catches, they didn't let it destroy them. Michigan didn't let the momentum overtake them like we've seen in the past, where it starts going bad, and now, oh no, here we go. And then Ohio State goes on like a 21-0 run, and Michigan State's having to play catch-up with an offense that wasn't built to catch up. Michigan came out, scored a touchdown on the first drive, really should have gone up either 10-0 or 14-0, and Cade McNamara threw that interception on that second drive to give Ohio State some life. But what does Michigan do? They hold them to a field goal. Those plays are the differences in games. Those are the differences. So congrats to Michigan, a well-earned win. You win by 15, had to run it when you had to run it, you were able to. And that, if anything, that gives me more confidence than anything as a Michigan fan to say, wait a minute, okay, we know this isn't Ohio State's best team, but we were more physical than they were. We were able to win the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, and that's the key. That's the recipe. That's the whole kit and caboodle. And we'll see if it can continue because they're going to play, you know, Wisconsin is not going to be a pushover. They are not going to be a pushover. And it should be very interesting to see how it plays out in the Big Ten. And if Michigan can sneak in the playoff, you know, a team we just kept talking about, Ohio State. Michigan pulls the upset, and now they're going to be in the conversation more than anybody. But I do want to move on. It was just such a great weekend of college football. And, you know, looking around the major rivalries, and we'll go ahead and get into Oklahoma State, and then get into the Iron Bowl. We knew this game was going to be interesting. We knew this game was going to, you know, either be very high flying or 10-7, depending on which, you know, Oklahoma team showed up. But what ended up costing really both of these teams and Oklahoma at the end is unforced errors. I mean, you go back to the, you know, fumbles that were basically dropped out of the hands, not even forced. You go back to the special teams miscues, the muff punt for a touchdown, stuff like that. Oklahoma State ends up winning 37-33 in what was a hell of a game. But going into the fourth, you know, you go into halftime, it's 24-24. Okay, who can make adjustments? You come out in the third quarter, and it absolutely falls apart with unforced errors for Oklahoma State. And you're sitting here thinking to yourself, well, you know, I know the Sanders kid. He's not a great thrower. I mean, he went for 214, had a touchdown and two picks. QPR wasn't great. He led him in rushing like you would have thought he would with 16 carries, 93 yards, and a touchdown. But you don't feel super confident when Oklahoma comes out and puts up a 9 spot in the third and you don't respond with anything. So you're sitting there down 33-24 going into the fourth. You felt like Oklahoma State needed a little bit of help, and they got it. And you know, at the end of the day, we say it all the time, and I think it's a true fact. Most teams don't win games, they lose them. Muff punt was huge in this game. You look at momentum in a game like this, especially for the home team. And Oklahoma State was able to hold on. I mean, you outscore them 13-0 in the fourth. I mean, Oklahoma State didn't score a point in the third. Oklahoma didn't score a point in the fourth. I was shocked that Oklahoma didn't score a point in the fourth. And Caleb Williams, while he wasn't the most efficient, 20 of 39, you know, isn't exactly the epitome of efficiency. He did have 250 yards with 3 touchdowns and no turnovers. To compare QBR, I mean, Caleb Williams was at 72 and Sanders was at almost 59. I mean, Brooks goes for 22 for 140, but no touchdowns. Caleb Williams, 19 carries for 36 yards, no touchdowns. You go look at the Oklahoma State rushing stat line. Sanders had one, Warren had one, hell, Martin had one. It's about scoring. Oklahoma had a lot of yardage in between the end zones, but they weren't able to cash it at the end. And when I look at this Oklahoma State team, are they their defense, we know, has been above average, has been upper echelon, wasn't great against Oklahoma, especially in the first half. But this Oklahoma State team, 11-1, going to play in the Big 12 championship. So now you've got 11-1 Oklahoma State, and you've got 11-1 Michigan. And when you look at these two teams, there are actually a lot of similarities, in my opinion, between Oklahoma State and Michigan. And this wasn't a mirror image of what happened in the Michigan game. I mean, there wasn't a barrage of rushing yards by one side or the other. This was a game of who would make the most mistakes. Not only that, but who would capitalize on those mistakes. And if you watch the whole game, it was just a collection of multiple mistakes that really juiced up this score, in my opinion. You take away the unforced errors, I was very surprised to see. This game, to me, is a 27-24, maybe even lower than that, 24-21. And we all thought it was going to be a knockdown, drag-out fight. But when you have games that go like this, it's amazing how contagious mistakes are. And it's not just the big ones that we're talking about, the muff punts, stuff like this. It's the false starts on third and short. It's the drops that you know was going to be a first down. It's the drops that should have been picks, especially drops that should have been picks in the red zone when you're on defense. The ones that feel like they matter more than any other. So this game was not a Picasso painting. This game was more of a Jackson Pollock. Bunch of stuff got thrown against the wall. It got crazy. You try and figure it out. Is this Oklahoma State team dangerous? To a point. I don't think the ceiling on this Michigan and Oklahoma State team is super high. But if you're Oklahoma and Lincoln Riley, and we've talked about this a ton, put out the report a couple weeks ago that he'd been offered the 8-year, $12 million contract, which I still believe. Now, he came out last night and said that he's not going to be the next head coach at LSU, which, you know, he kind of had the non-denial earlier, comes out and says it point blank. Again, in this world, we've seen it with Saban. We've seen it multiple times. You know, and Oklahoma fans, and I get it. Look, I'm a big boy. You know, the funny part is when you talk about offering somebody something, and I said that I feel like if they offered him that with that amount of money, I don't know how you don't take it. Or if they offer him and he comes back and says, I want this amount, that's more. How do you not take it? Just the human condition to me. But if he doesn't, he doesn't. And, you know, it's a gut-wrenching loss, especially, I mean, you ask the guy the question. I know you got to ask him the question, but you know, is he going to say, yeah, you know, I'm taking the LSU job. I got a bunch of guys that just got their guts ripped out in that locker room that I've told every day how much I care about them and that they care about me, and we've been through a lot together. So I don't expect him to come out and say, yeah, I'm going to take it. That's not what you do to the players. Forget yourself. Those guys went and put it all on the line for you and lost. So, you know, I'm sure Oklahoma fans, if he doesn't take it, and again, in this crazy college football world, you never know what's going to happen. But I'll stand by that he was offered the job. I'll stand by that if I was offered that amount of money and I thought somebody else was offered that amount of money, that they would take it. Now, if LSU doesn't get Lincoln Riley, it's going to be interesting to see. But look, Oklahoma fans, I'm a grown-up. Y'all can come let me have it. It's fine. But again, I'll believe, you know, to my dying day that he was offered that amount of money, that amount of time. And look, they're not going to come out and Lincoln Riley's not going to come out tomorrow and be like, all right, you guys, LSU did offer it to me, but I told him no. It's not how it works. They'll deny there's any ever contact. Because you got to think going toward the next contract. You don't want that to be held over your head. Well, you know, you went out talking last time, so how can we trust you? Or right when it starts going bad at Oklahoma, they can just dangle that over your head that you were looking around this, that, and the other. So you can believe what you want. The radio guys out there can say what they want. And Lincoln, he may not end up going to LSU, but I'll stand by that he was offered that amount of money for that amount of time. And again, you know, it is what it is. And in a lot of cases, there's multiple offers out there for multiple guys, just depending on the circumstance. But it was a tough loss for Oklahoma, a game, you know, going into the fourth quarter that you felt like they had in the bag. And if fans want to take their frustration out on me on losing to the rival, that's fine. But you're looking at Mike Gundy and Oklahoma State, and they've just been sneaky all year. They've managed to sneak through the whole year. And we've talked about them, and we put them in our mock 12 playoff and this, that, and the other. But it hasn't been a full focus or full-throated analysis on what Oklahoma State's doing, because at the end of the day, for lack of a better phrase, it's just not that sexy. But it works. And they waited Oklahoma out. And congrats to them. Very interested to see how they retool things, per se. Offensively, I'm very interested to see what Gundy does in this championship game. That's what I'm interested to see. But speaking about waiting out, and obviously the Iron Bowl, and I want to attack this, you know, kind of backwards to Ford's. Hell of a game. Hell of a game. And before I even get into it, on the Auburn side, Derek Mason, for 3 3/4 quarters, if he was calling it, now, you know, just the way it was getting called looked way different than Derek Mason's called anything. So, you know, about halfway through watching the game, I was wondering if he was even calling it. But going under the auspices that he was, for 3 3/4, Derek Mason called an unbelievable game on defense. You want to know why? Because he was aggressive. Because he wasn't rushing three. The right side of Alabama's offensive line was struggling as bad as I've ever seen. So I want to say that right off the top about Derek Mason. And Auburn's defense played a hell of a game. But you get paid for those last drives. You get paid to not let your arch rival drive 99 yards in your house because you sat back and got nervous. It doesn't matter if you don't finish. It doesn't matter. You can build 3/4 of a beautiful house. But if you don't put the roof on it, you're not going to live in it. And I was very surprised that he took his foot off the gas and let Bryce Young sit back there and move around and find crossers. Because if I'm going down, damn it, I'm going down swinging. You altered from the game plan that had gotten you there. You decided to not dance with the one that brought you because you got nervous. And to quote Billy Napier, scared money don't make no money. And not finishing like that and blowing 4 leads like that in the second half doesn't keep you around the 3-3-4 very long. And people say, oh, well, the defense did this and the defense did that. Well, when it mattered, and should Tank have stayed in bounds? Hell yeah, and I'm going to get to the offense in a second. But when it mattered, when you needed it, when the guys are looking at you saying, we've been hunting them all day, let us go hunt. And you put the leash on them. And that's what happens. And when you do that, the sad part is, that's almost what deserves to happen. It had been an unbelievably called game. Auburn was dominating on the blitz. Auburn was able to put pressure. I mean, even 5-man pressures. You got them backed up. There's a 99.9999% chance that Auburn wins the game. And you let them off the hook. You let them off the hook. Without Jameson Williams, they don't even have their speedster out there. So you can look at, like I said, 3/4 of this game from an Auburn perspective defensively, say, man, we played great. But when it mattered, 99 yards. 99 yards. And you let them have it. Now, they had to make the plays. That was a huge clutch drive by Bryce. But I guarantee you, even he was probably surprised that Auburn took the pedal off the gas. When you see the finish line, sometimes you got to hit the pedal harder. I don't know how long Derek Mason's going to last at Auburn. And to be honest with you, went back and watched a little bit of that game. I don't know how much – the way that game was called for three-fourths of the game was way different than what we've seen anything all year, which I'm telling you, part of me thinks he wasn't calling it. But at the end, whether it was Mason, whoever it was, dance with the one that brought you. And I'm a defensive guy, and there's a saying, they don't score, they don't win. And I'm going to get to Alabama in a second. Auburn offensively. All those fans. Bo Nix needs to be sitting somewhere, and I know he's hurt because they lost, even though he didn't get to play. He's probably sitting back there feeling a little vindicated. All the fans talk about TJ Finley this and TJ Finley that and TJ Finley's like Babe Ruth with the wiffle ball bat. Well, you saw it. He's not ready. And you saw without, and again, does TJ have a chance to be a good player? Yes. But if you watch that game, he doesn't know what he's looking at. He spun out into a corner blitz. I don't think he understands what he's looking at. Coverage-wise, front-wise, and he doesn't have a lot of help around him. Same thing I've been saying about Bo Nix the whole season. But all these Auburn fans wanted to blame Bo Nix for the losses. Were there some games where Bo Nix didn't play good? Yes, but he's not the reason. Now you put a very average quarterback behind a very average line with two elite running backs and an average group of wide receivers that happen to play pretty decent. But TJ Finley is not the answer. Bo Nix is in that game, and look, hindsight's 20/20. Excuses are excuses. Auburn probably wins that game by 14, maybe 20 points. But TJ Finley is not the savior that some people thought he was. And you can't dress like Cam and come in and not ball before the game. You can't swagger jack and then not ball. And if I'm an Auburn fan, I'm hoping Bo Nix comes back and that the portal needs to yield some O linemen. And I don't blame Mike Bobo for trying to run the ball. I don't blame him for trying to run the ball. You've got to somewhat try and stay balanced. But when you don't have the players, and look, I don't think he was creative enough. I don't think Auburn, you know, once they realized, you know, that they were going to get punked in the run game again, which they did, this offensive line just continues to get punked in big games. I'm just waiting for Ashton Kutcher to run out in the field and stop the game. Like, no, we're just punking y'all. This isn't the real Auburn offensive line. And that's what, you know, and at the end of the day, it's been the same story. You're not good enough to block them. Because it's not like Tank and Jarquez need a ton. They just can't do it up front. The whole group can't do it. You're going to have to go. You know, sometimes they're just you put the car in the race and it's not fast enough to win. And it is what it is. And Bama knew that. I mean, Will Anderson and because there were multiple times. If you go back and look, Auburn had the ball inside Alabama territory up 10 to nothing. And I do have to say, going back to Mike Bobo, the decision to throw it with TJ at the end when he threw the pick was just dumb. It was just dumb. But hindsight's 20/20. If it hits, he looks like a genius. You know, wow, giving TJ Finley that chance. But with all that went down, with everything that went down in the game, you had a chance, you had multiple chances to win, and you didn't. Winners win. The longer that game went on, Alabama has a lot better players than Auburn. They do. That's the truth. There's a lot more players that will play in the NFL on that Alabama roster than Auburn does. And the longer that game went on, we talk about gravity with Georgia, right? Talent over time equals win. Auburn had many chances to sneak it out early. Blew every one of them. So you knew watching that game, the longer Bryce and them had, the more chances they had, the more times that Auburn offense had to be out in the field, that it was probably going to land on Bama. And it did. And it did. Very surprised Brian Harsin didn't go for two. Very surprised he didn't go for two on the first overtime touchdown. Throw the tight end screen, see what happens. Because talent over time equals wins. So, you know, when you look at it from an Alabama perspective, because I know what Alabama fans are doing this morning. They feel good. They're glad they won. But you're looking, excuse me, you're looking into the future and you're seeing that Georgia defensive front seven. And if Alabama's offensive line is going to struggle with Auburn's defensive line, who hasn't had a great pass rush the whole year, with Georgia, it's going to be like when the wave hits on deep impact. You've got to stand there and get blown apart. Because those guys aren't messing around. And those guys can not only equal you in talent, they can elevate you in talent. But you had to survive if you're Bama. And if you look at Ohio State losing, and you kind of look at some of the carnage going on outside, you're looking at that Houston-Cincinnati game. That's a big one. Now, Notre Dame's done. Notre Dame's on the sideline now. They don't have to play a conference championship game. So if you're Alabama, you still feel like it's a must win. Defensively, they played very well. You lose Jameson Williams, that was a tough break. But offensively, they are going to have to find some answers up front. I mean, I'm looking at the box score. I mean, there was a point. I mean, we both watched this where Alabama had like negative 10 rushing yards in the third quarter.
Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. 90 seconds, all it takes. Use the code HERD. New customers bet $5. That's it, $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code HERD only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time. I'm talking Hall of Famers, MVPs, gold medalists.
I absolutely hate the Colts, bro. This game, I swear, led to the Deflategate.
Hey, guys, this ball's a little flat.
Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl?
Julian walking around, I'm pretty sure he had his shirt off for reasons I'm not sure. He was saying, gotta believe.
Oh, you gotta believe. From 18-1 with Eli.
Are you calling Bill just a cheater? Is that what you're saying right now?
He's looking for an advantage.
The 2004 ALCS with Big Pop.
The Red Sox in 2004 bounced back after the 3-0 in a winner chicken dinner, homie.
The Immaculate Reception with Terry Bradshaw.
Fired the ball. I hear the roar of the crowd. I never thought he caught the ball.
but he did.
We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now they finished. Alabama finished with 71 yards. Auburn finished with 22 rushing yards. A gross number. If I'm Will Friend, I'm you know, at some point you got to shake hands and move on to the next group of guys. And I'm talking about getting new guys in. Because 22 rushing yards at home, it's not very good. And Alabama, 71 rushing yards with the team they have, the talent they have. Bryce ended up going 25 of 51. Not very efficient at all for 317 and two touchdowns. A lot of that was late. But Auburn had to get out of that game early. They had to win that one early. And when you don't, and you let them hang around, you lose. Whether it's Tank not going out of bounds, whether it's changing your game plan defensively, the last 99 yards, whether it's not taking advantage of field position. You had Bama down. You had him. You had him. And you let him go. And I will go back to the quote that Billy Napier has. Scared money don't make money. And Brian Harsin's going to learn that really quickly, very quickly. Because, all you know, it was 6-2, number 13 in the country, talking about SEC Coach of the Year, and then you fall off a cliff. And the scary part is you don't just fall off a cliff randomly. You blow four games. So you're wondering if, you know, the DNA of the team. It's what it comes down to. Winners win. Winners win. Almost doesn't count. Except horseshoes and hand grenades. And I didn't see a horseshoe or see a hand grenade, thank goodness, the whole game. So they got a lot of fixing. They got some DNA to fix. You have to start, you know, you have to bring guys in to know. I mean, Alabama knows how to win. Those guys know how to win. Auburn doesn't. And that's kudos to Alabama. That's kudos to Nick Saban. He's had a hell of a head start on Brian Harsin. I know that, but you had him, and you let him off the hook. And you, that one will haunt you for a long time. That one will haunt you for a long time. But, you know, looking forward, you saw, you know, both teams fighting. You saw how important that rivalry is. I mean, on every third and one, every fourth and one, every pass. I mean, you had guys that played their guts out. Nobody's saying they didn't do that. But winners win. And that's what Alabama's been. And that's just the case of the matter. And looking ahead for Alabama, again, kind of looking at this Georgia point, I'm struggling to see how Georgia consistently, or how Alabama consistently protects Bryce Young and doesn't have to do a bunch of sprint out, roll out, boots, waggle, stuff like that to be able to change the launch point. The good news for Alabama fans, too, Jameson Williams won't miss a half against Georgia. And you just survived a game where you played about as bad as you could play. I mean, you bobbled the snap on the field goal. You bobbled the snap on fourth and two. And you got away with it. You know you're not going to play that bad again. But how much can Alabama elevate, especially up front, offensively, to be able to get some semblance of the rushing game going? Because if they don't, and they're one-dimensional, we will keep seeing the same movie over and over again that we have with Georgia the whole season. The level of consistency has been unparalleled. It's been unparalleled. So where do we sit today? After a crazy rivalry week, you know, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Matt Corral, Lane Kiffin and them getting a win in the Egg Bowl on the road late in the rain, you know, holding Mississippi State. It was a defensive battle. Had two high-flying offenses, but sometimes the weather, you know, can dictate other things. So where do we sit now? With Ohio State losing, with Alabama not looking great. My top four right now, and y'all know where I've stood on this. Give me Georgia 1. Give me Michigan 2 right now. Give me Bama 3. Give me Oklahoma State 4. Cincinnati rolled through East Carolina. I'm one game away from my brother winning the bet and him being able to put me in the trash can if they don't lose to Houston, which I'm not looking forward to that. Notre Dame handles business against Stanford. It's about to get wacky. It's about to get really wacky. But I'll tell you this, there's no better sporting event or sporting weekend than rivalry week in college football. There is none. There is none. And we had three fantastic games. We were very well treated. A few games on the outside. Iowa goes to Nebraska. We all know this earlier in the week. Nebraska finds a way to Post Malone fall apart. As usual, they win 28-21, scoring a whopping 49 points and defying all the odds, which, by the way, we had a pretty good week betting as well. Arkansas was able to handle Missouri. You know, Georgia and Georgia Tech, that was like, you know, when you let the JV play the varsity. That's what that looked like. Georgia won 45-0. Could have been a lot worse. They could have probably played with their twos, and the score would have been pretty similar. Baylor survives against Texas Tech. Oregon wins the Civil War. Kind of feels weird to say that. And Michigan State survives Penn State as BYU survives USC. So looking ahead, looking into the handy-dandy notebook per se of who's playing when, conference championship week, which is going to be absolutely phenomenal. You look at the SEC championship. We know we got Bama. We know we got Georgia. That's a matchup we're going to dissect. I mean, we're going to have great guests on all week. It's obviously going to be in Atlanta, so we're going to be there. But looking around the rest of the country in college football, you know, rivalry week gives us a nice glass of milk, and then you get championship week. So we've got Oregon and Utah part two after Utah dismantled Oregon. You know, even with two losses, you still got a chance with all the stuff going on, but basically ending their playoff hopes. Baylor plays Oklahoma State in the Big 12 championship we never saw coming. Can't wait to see that. Dave Aranda looking like he's going to stick around at Baylor. And you got Michigan and Iowa in the Big 10 championship game. I said Wisconsin earlier, misspoke. To me, this is a game where if you're Michigan, you'd much rather play Iowa than Wisconsin. As crazy as that sounds, I know Wisconsin didn't look good against Minnesota, but this Iowa team offensively, if you're Aiden Hutchinson and Jobu and those guys, you're going to be pinning your ears back and you're going to be having a blast. I like Michigan, a very confident Michigan team in this game. And then to me, the sneakiest game of all of them, the sneakiest conference championship game of all of them, Houston and Cincinnati. Going to be interesting. I mean, we got Pitt and Wake in the ACC game, but that really has no consequence of any matter. And then the makeup game for USC and Cal. But some really good games this next weekend, championship games. Kent State, Northern Illinois, very surprising MAC championship game. But make sure you check us out on the volume. Hit that subscribe button. Turn on the notifications button. And Oklahoma fans, look, I get it. Y'all want to come, you know, talk your ish, that's fine. But again, I'm going to stand by what I said. He was offered that deal about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, and I stand by that. You know, never said he was going to take it. Said I would take it. I don't know how you wouldn't take it. Didn't think Oklahoma would match. Be very interested to see if there is a restructuring deal-wise at Oklahoma with Lincoln. I think that'll tell you everything you needed to know. But look, you know, again, I was going to tell you what I think and what I'm hearing from the people that I trust. And just because he didn't take it doesn't mean that he wasn't offered it. And that's just part of it. That's part of the deal. So, you know, again, appreciate you guys checking us out. Make sure you follow us too on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff. Stay locked in. We got a great week, you know, going to be breaking it down. I mean, now that we have less games, you can really dive into the analytics of what's going on, what to expect, the matchups schematically, everything that's going down, but you know where to find it. All right. Y'all have a great weekend. Hope you had a great Turkey Day. Thanksgiving holiday, got to see the family and friends. And if you didn't, hope you had a good time just chilling at the house watching some great college football. And we'll talk to you tomorrow live from the College Football Hall of Fame from 3 to 4 Eastern. Talk soon.
The Volume.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time with the players and coaches who lived in them. Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl? Or what about the after parties? We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.